Larry is going to put a bright, shiny face on the WEF. This is not good news for us.
If you're not a professional investor, you need to make sure that you really dig into this stuff, understand the risks.
Man, I want to give a shout out to the local liberals, man. They got a win on this, really calling this. They've been talking about how Trump's going to do this sort of thing for forever.
Start mining at home, get into a pool, learn how to do it, and start decentralizing the hash rate. The beauty of Bitcoin is that it's not stoppable.
It's not that it defeats Bitcoin in any way, but it does it set us back in terms of the adoption curve. And I don't know that that's a legitimate concern, but it's one that I think about. Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of Bitcoin Banter. Tony is traveling today, so I've got Greer and Ben Werman. Gents, thanks for joining. Alrighty, up first we have the World Economic Forum has named BlackRock's Larry Fink as its new co-chairman, interim co-chairman, which is troubling for people who care about liberty and are worried about the powers that be looking to control Bitcoin in some capacity. Greer, I'll let you take this one first, man. What's your take on this?
Yeah, I think this is a brand overhaul for the WEF. You know, they had the cartoon villain Klaus Schwab, not great for their impression or their views. And I think that Larry is going to put a bright, shiny face on the WEF. This is not good news for us because I think as an interim role, you know, he's going to elevate the WEF. They'll be taken seriously again. He'll be able to hand over the keys to someone like Christine Lagarde at the ECB. And, you know, we know that the ECB is looking at doing a digital euro this fall. They want your private savings. They want to read your private messages. And I think Larry moving over there temporarily is going to raise the credibility for maybe doing something similar here in the US. So I think the goal here is just to continue to mock and criticize and call out this group. Good for Larry, but bad for the rest of the world.
Yeah, I agree. I hadn't really thought about it that way, but I think Klaus Schwab, he seemed like an evil villain, you know, like that was sort of the perspective you had to have listening to him. It'll be interesting to see, because I think most people outside of the Bitcoin space probably view Larry Fink as a respectable business leader and that sort of thing. They don't necessarily understand what we tend to understand about him and about BlackRock. Ben, I'd be curious what you think about this.
Yeah, those are very good points, Greer, for why people should be concerned. I'll swing on the other side as devil's advocate and say, these people are all so intertwined and connected anyway that I think that they pretty much all were in cahoots before this. So I don't even know enough about the exact organization structure to know how much is this actually going to change it when they're already all working together beforehand. So we'll see. But yeah, I mean, just keep shit posting and calling them out and awakening people about the truth behind all of these elites. And then that's the way to go forward.
Maybe the bigger concern here is, to Greer, to your point, yes, like a better face for the WEF, but also the fact that he is a guy who doesn't necessarily control, what is it, 600,000 or 700,000 Bitcoin, something like that, in the ETF product, largest ETF product, super successful. But to have someone like that at the helm of a terrible organization like the WEF, to me, is concerning, not necessarily because anything kills Bitcoin, but because there could be an influence. I think a lot about a hard fork scenario, right? Is there a future where, you know, Larry Fink, Coinbase, the federal government, if they ever adopt a real SBR, look to hard fork Bitcoin into something they want it to be? And while we sort of cypherpunk types say, no, not going that direction, the masses who are piling into the ETFs and treasury companies who have the same custodian are more or less forced into that. And we've got a supply inflation of Bitcoin or something else. So that's maybe my bigger concern is that it's not that it defeats Bitcoin in any way, but it does it set us back in terms of the adoption curve. And I don't know that that's a legitimate concern, but it's one that I think about. All right, guys.
Increases my conviction that Bitcoin is going to be the battleground for the future. I think there's going to be just a huge war between both sides, no matter how it fabricates into reality. I think that's a fair bet.
So speaking of treasury companies, Dark Side of the Moon said, remember, I warned you about the risks of Metaplanet. Now you know why the stock has been in steady decline. Not having access to asymmetric information is a classic mistake of novice investors. And so the announcement is that a very large company, SBI Holdings, based in Japan, is launching two crypto-related ETFs. Big news for Japanese investors who are looking for this sort of exposure to Bitcoin. Not something that I necessarily endorse or get excited about, but if you have a company with who owns, to my understanding, like a single hotel, small, very small company, large market cap because of what they've been doing with Bitcoin, but now they've got real competition from a company with a much more robust business model. My understanding is a very large suite of financial services products. To me, that's very concerning. It seems to me like this could be a risk all over the place with some of these treasury companies we see popping up. The only notable exception maybe being MicroStrategy, just because of the lead and the fact that they do have and have had an existing business model and a profitable enterprise for quite some time. Ben, what's your thought on this, Mr. GameStop?
Yeah, well, I would say my biggest question, I'm not sure if there have been any of the execs coming out to talk about this from Metaplanet's side, but I'm curious if they were expecting something like this to happen, because it seems like it's a plausible thing that's going to happen. When you break the door down, other people are going to follow, or if this was unexpected for them. And maybe they thought they were so early this wasn't going to happen, because surely this is going to change everything for that region, and it'll be very interesting to watch what happens next. And yeah, a lot of other companies are going to be watching this, making decisions accordingly.
That I think that's the concern, right? Is that a lot of these companies think that they feel like they're early, because we always say we're early with Bitcoin, but there seems to be an uptick in enterprises and institutions trying to figure this out. And I think especially the other one that sticks out to me, and again, I don't track these closely, so I'm take my opinion with a grain of salt, but what is it, the Smarter Web company in the UK? Same kind of thing. It's not like a seriously robust business in an innovative industry with tons of cash flows. It seems like it would be very easy for someone else in the UK to pop up and say, we're going to buy 10 times what they've purchased in terms of Bitcoin. We have much more financial stability, and basically drive their MNAV down to one or less than one.
Greer, it's just a totally different dynamic for the corporate Bitcoin adoption rates, because at the retail level, it's a little more linear, but in corporate adoption, you could be super early, but someone with 100 times more money than you can just jump in, you're immediately wiped out. It's a different game.
Yeah. I imagine, like with the Mag 7, you know, what could it mean? Maybe MicroStrategy does have a lead that no one else is going to catch, but if Apple or Google or someone like that wanted to get into this race, what would that look like, and how would that change the landscape? Greer, exactly. What do you think?
That's why I'm wondering if this could be a microcosm if that eventually happens. We could get a preview of it here.
Oh, for sure. Greer.
Yeah, so I think two things here. If you're an investor and you want to put money into Metaplanet, like we've talked before, I think you have to be cautious, because obviously they could get outrun here by a much larger company. I think the good thing for Metaplanet is they have almost 19,000 Bitcoin on the balance sheet. So they've got $2 billion in Bitcoin. What do you do with that? What do you do next? They could keep growing, or they could expand their business, or try to find another way to raise capital. I think the story here is, if you don't know everything about the company, don't put your money into it. Buy Bitcoin, put it in self-custody, and just observe this from the outside. There's nothing wrong with not investing in any of these Bitcoin treasury companies. I think, yeah, MicroStrategy is the biggest. I don't think Apple or Microsoft could catch them without completely making the price escape from them. So I do think that MicroStrategy has quite a moat. But you're right, these companies have to find a way to continue acquiring Bitcoin. Otherwise, it's not going to work. And if a bigger player comes in, it gets really bad. So I think at least they have this, you know, a ton of Bitcoin on the balance sheet, and they can figure out what to do with it next. Hopefully it'll be a good story.
That's such a good point. It's so easy to forget in all the noise that at the end of the day, you still have all that Bitcoin. So you're going to win no matter what. It's just a question of if those derivative investors, the people that bought the stock, are going to be happy. Maybe not, but they still have the Bitcoin as a company.
I think that's the key point there, because we saw this. Greer, were you on, was it last week we were talking about Nakamoto and how it's getting compressed because they had early investors who are up like 20x and a huge incentive to sell. And retail investors who bought after the priority early investors are stuck there holding the bag. So they bought at $17 and now it's down to $6 or whatever, and it's probably headed lower. If you're not a professional investor, you need to make sure that you really dig into this stuff, understand the risks, because just because they hold Bitcoin and they might be financially solvent and stable does not mean that your investment, your speculative investment, is going to pay off. Those are two distinct considerations. So buyer beware, everyone.
Now, here's a question for the panel on that point, if you don't mind, we stay here for a sec. Is that something you classify as a pump and dump?
Yeah. So that's a good question. Yes. Greer, you give your thoughts.
I think it is, because you were not included in the initial funding round. You know, the regular folks could not buy in. It was for the insiders. They bought it at $1.12 a share of Kindly MD or whatever it was, Nakamoto. And yeah, they're waiting for the merge. When that thing, it was projected to go up quite a bit more so they could dump on retail as they rush in. So again, I think we're being manipulated by the narratives. And we want to find a way to get that cheap buck, get that quick money. And we think it's going to be a Bitcoin correlated stock. But I'm sorry, the players are just too big and we don't know what their plans are. And the difference is Bitcoin is finite, scarce. You can run it through your node. You can verify yourself. It takes all the risk away. You know, so I would say, unless you're in the room signing a contract on some deal, why not just stay away?
I think that the net effect is that of a pump and dump. I don't know. I think I'll be more gracious with intentions. I think that there are a lot of people who do seem highly I told you guys offline, like I had a podcast with Mark Moss and he was talking about his enthusiasm for treasury companies. And I don't think Mark is a scammer. I think he thinks there's a use case for them. I tend to disagree that there are going to be thousands as he proposes. But at the end of the day, it doesn't matter if by design they're pumping and dumping, or if that's just the nature of the business because you're going to have early investors. It's the same way that VC pours money into a company. They have no idea if it's actually going to work, and that's why they make 20 investments at once, and 19 of them completely get obliterated, and so do all the people who come in shortly after VC gets there. It's not necessarily that they were hoping to pump and dump, but when the incentives align for them to dump after a big pump, they're going to do it. And so you end up with a pump and dump regardless of anyone's motivation behind it. I think that's maybe what I would say.
It's not a black and white term. So there is no perfect answer there. It's a gray area.
Yeah. If you get dumped on, it feels like a pump and dump.
Yeah. For the retail investor,
black and white if you're one of those people.
The retail investor is just as poor no matter what David Bailey or anyone else was trying to achieve. So keep that in mind, everyone. Okay, we've got the Bank of International Settlements wants to start marking bitcoins. The central bank of central banks is essentially proposing to create a grading system for each Satoshi based on transactions. If it has a low score, companies and even users could refuse to accept that Bitcoin, claiming it would be tainted by links to illicit activities. And we all know that we don't want anyone in the elite level defining what an illicit activity is, just like hate speech or anything else. Greer, you made an interesting comment about this offline and the importance of one particular activity we can do to protect ourselves.
Yeah, I think you have to run your own mining equipment at home. Get a solo miner. And yes, you alone won't be the one that would keep these coins from being transacted. But enough of us together are mining Bitcoin at home. There's no censoring of transactions anywhere. So today, you can look at Foundry, and over the weekend, they mined 8 blocks in a row. If those blocks contain transactions that were marked by the BIS, you could hypothetically say that they could have refused those transactions. I think the most important thing is to, you know, flip these guys the bird, start mining at home, get into a pool, learn how to do it, and start decentralizing the hash rate. You know, that the beauty of Bitcoin is that it's not stoppable. I don't think that we're going to see a lot of this, but I think this is one of those stretching the Overton window scenarios. They're, you know, kind of licking their fingers, sticking it in the wind and seeing how the community will react to it. I think, you know, like everything else, we need to humiliate them with memes, you know, criticize them, call out what they're doing is wrong. And most importantly, we need to get more people hashing at home.
I think we should also encourage them to start tracking the serial number of dollars and euros and having them determine which of those have been used for illicit activities. Right. So at least we have, you know, equal representation across all currencies. Ben, what do you think, man?
Yeah, that was beautifully said by Greer. I don't have a whole lot to add other than these other services like CoinJoin and other privacy-centered services it'll be good for them too, and a good boost of motivation for their teams to keep creating these products that help people that want to maintain their privacy, because privacy is everyone's right in the space. And we'll be continuing to watch what is built out of this to keep people away from the stupidity of bureaucracy, which I'd always been on Bitcoiners to be able to figure ways out around stupid rules.
The challenge is, my understanding is, a lot of the CoinJoin coins are the ones that are problematic when it comes to censorship, right? Like if Coinbase detects that you've got a CoinJoin, you know, if you've got sats that have been CoinJoin, they might censor you even without the BIS involving themselves. So while I agree with you, like your point being the solution, I don't know if that's it. We're going to come up with something. We've got plenty of smart people working on it.
Yeah, I'm not technical enough to know exactly how it will develop, but that is an interesting point, a good one to add. But I guess I would keep it more general. Like, I feel like Bitcoiners will figure something out. We got smart developers in there. I trust them, whatever it turns out to be.
And the other thing that we'll do, I think, very effectively is just ignore the BIS. I think most of us aren't big fans, don't have a lot of trust for them. So just, transit, like take self-custody, run a solo miner, run your node, transact as you please and desire, and the world will go on.
I'd like to see how they try to stop me from going and zapping a farmer's market merchant and buying some raw milk. Good luck.
Oh, they're coming for you, Ben. All righty. So speaking of Greer's point, we've got someone shared, the odds of a solo mine a block are impossible. Sure, this is over 7 solo miners this year. But if you don't have a lottery Bitcoin miner running, you're sort of insane. Get one for $30. And they link to an Amazon one. I would recommend you apply a little bit more hash rate than what this little thing does. You can get a BitAx. Brains makes a really cool miner. By the way, if you need help, plug for the Bitcoin way. We can help you set up your solo miner, get you running. But Greer, this was the point you raised. I think that we were doing some math beforehand on what would it take if we got 100 million people running a 1 tera hash solo miner in their home, what sort of hash rate would that apply to the network? And it's about 14 to 17%, according to ChatGPT. So make the case more compelling, Greer.
Yeah. I mean, so I personally have a 1 in 900,000 chance every single day to mine a block. I spent $2.99 on a miner. You can find it, or we can talk about it later. But I will take those odds every single day. It costs about $10 a month for me to run it. I'm solo mining through CK Pool. Every day, I wait for a notification on my phone to pop up that says, hey, you've won the block reward. You get 3.125 Bitcoin in the transaction fees. You can run it through your node. You can create your own block templates. You can run it, knots through Datum to Ocean. This is the next step if you love Bitcoin. You need to mine. The one we're looking at is like the easy bake oven, right? It has almost no hash rate. Hash rate today is just been parabolic. It's hit 1 zeta hash. I mean, just a monster amount of electricity. But that doesn't mean you don't have a chance. And for a few $100, like you said, you could get a BitAx through the Bitcoin way. They're like $500. And believe me, it's so much more valuable to do that than to buy a lotto ticket. So, I think your next step is solo mining and learn about it. There are so many cool ways to do it.
So you're saying there's a chance. I think that is completely true. I would say most people still need to run a node. We do not have enough nodes online. So go run a node. You need to have a vote in the future of the network, but also, I mean, in the grand scheme of things, it's a trivial amount of money, a couple $100 here or there, split up the payment of a node and then get a miner later, whatever. But like, start this for two reasons. One, to Greer's point, it's an incredible way for you to make a small contribution to the network. But two, it's also a really good way to just continue learning. Like when you go through that process of setting up a miner, you begin to appreciate what it is that you're doing. It's like you have this moment of clarity as to these are the devices that are making the network run. It just happens to be on an industrial scale most of the time, but you can do the same thing at home. That is the beauty of Bitcoin. Ben, you travel too much to solo mine, dude. You'd have to be like carrying around in a backpack, man. Do you even have a home? Do you have a place that you live?
No, I don't. So I've been going around a bunch of conferences here in Europe. I went to both Riga and Helsinki recently for conferences, and I know Bidax was in Riga. I think they might have been Helsinki too, not 100% sure. But just seeing that and holding it, I was so tempted to grab one and just try to plug it into the places I'm staying on this trip. But I ended up not doing that because it's too much space. But man, Greer, hearing your story about your daily lottery makes me understand more how mining can get addicting very quick. Just wanting to chop zeros off of those odds every day, just stacking more miners. It makes more sense.
Tony always says that it's like an addiction. Once you buy one, you're like, okay, one terahash isn't enough. I need to get five more of these. And next thing you know, you have like a room dedicated to your mining operation, and you've just got 20 bit axes on a wall all running together. So yeah, I would encourage everyone to do that. It's a fun thing to do. And I had Scott from BitAx on the podcast a while back. He's an awesome guy. I mean, they're talking about proof of work. It's not just the miner, it's the guys behind this who are building these things and disassembling ASICs and taking the chips and building a new product that fits in your home. So
it's the most analogous thing in Bitcoin to straight up gambling, but it's gambling for a good cause.
Exactly. Well said. Okay, guys, there are now more home buyers over age 70 than under 35 per Fortune. And what they said was that the share of older baby boomers, so born 46 to 54, it's 22% of home buyers, while younger millennials and Gen Zers were 14 and 5% respectively. This is what happens when money dies. Ben, I don't know if you're even trying to buy a home or if you're just loving the nomad life. I know that's Tony's MO. So, but what would you say to people who are trying to understand why this is happening?
I mean, yeah, that's me. I'm living the nomad life and I love it, but I definitely wouldn't say that what I'm doing now is largely a result of this. You know, like if houses were more affordable, my whole life could have a different path. It's very possible because I'm right in the smack dab of the millennials that are feeling the pain of this and the Gen Z that soon will. And so it's crazy. And you can just tell how much people care about this because every time these tweets go out or people put them out on TikTok doing a walkthrough of how ridiculous the numbers are, showing the graphs, everyone's waking up to this. And the young folks are really resonating with it because they can understand it's impossible to buy a house. All these things these boomers are telling me that I'm just being lazy just doesn't make sense. And I'm glad that more and more people are realizing that because it's a great path into Bitcoin and a lot of these other financial awakening processes of really just understanding what the game board looks like right now. Stop feeling guilty for being a young person who can't do these things and buy Bitcoin.
Greer.
Yeah, I think fast forward 10 years and the headline changes to there are now more whole coiners over age 70 than under 35. 20 years, and there are now more half coiners. So I think part of this is really the luck of when you were born. You know, I like to, you know, I often join in on the boomer hate, but the truth is that the boomers just inherited a fantastic time to be employed, to buy stuff. The money hadn't completely been destroyed yet. And they came along at a perfect time to build wealth passively, you know, through home ownership and through pensions. And today, we don't get the homes, but we do have the Bitcoin or the opportunity to buy Bitcoin. You know, in the future, you're not going to be able to buy Bitcoin under $1 million. And that future might be 10 years away, 5 years, I don't know when. But I think now is the time pivot from trying to own a home and start focusing on owning Bitcoin. A tenth, a quarter, a half. And year by year, plan out how much do I need to spend to get to my next level in Bitcoin. That should be what we do. I mean, in the future, you know, we'll probably see people take a 30-year mortgage to buy a Bitcoin instead of buying a house. And over 30 years, they know by the time I'm 65, I'll have one Bitcoin if I make my payments every month. You know, so I think some of this we can't fight. It's bigger than us. This is macro. But you can make decisions in your own life and where you prioritize them. And I think Bitcoin's more important than having a house.
It's too late to front run the boomers on acquiring a home, but it's not too late to front run the boomers on acquiring a whole Bitcoin. So that's your mission, everyone, for the young people out there listening. All right.
I don't know if this was your inspiration for that point, but Bitstein, our friend Michael Goldstein a while ago, had a really great tweet that said, yes, boomers got to buy houses, but we get to buy Bitcoin. It's a way better deal long term. I think that sums it up. I agree with it.
Amen. Amen. Okay, the American Communist Uniparty is in talks to buy a 10% ownership stake in Intel. So the Trump administration is talking about acquiring a large portion of a large privately held company, well, public, but publicly traded, but private institution, private company. And this is, to me, is crazy. The funny thing is, I think the justification is going to come from so many people that this is strategically important and we need chips in the U.S. And I agree with all, like, we do need chips in the U.S., not necessarily for national security purposes, but from my view, like as a Bitcoiner, we need diversification of manufacturers for our mining hardware, which is something that I hope Intel can get into for us. It's interesting to me, though, that so many people are probably asleep at the wheel on this one. To me, the fact that the federal government would be buying a large stake like this in a privately held company is just insane. Greer, I think you sent this one to me, didn't you? What was your thought on this?
Yeah, I hate this. This, to me, is awful. I don't think the government should be picking winners and losers, and they certainly should not be investing public money, because every dollar the government has, they either create it or they confiscated it, right? They should not be taking a 10% ownership in anything. If they decide to help a business, they can also hurt a business. But if they decide to help, what they should be doing is getting out of the way. I understand chips are important. I understand the future competing against other countries is important. But I don't think that this is what we want. When the government owns the means of production, we know where that leads. Free markets are much better than anything like this. So I see this as one step further down the road from like a private-public partnership. So you have companies that are creating products for the U.S. government. They have a contract. They've been vetted. I think that that was one step away from the free market. This, to me, seems like a leap where, you know, who are they going to invest in tomorrow? Or which companies are going to be against what their interests are? We don't want the government in our businesses, in our companies. What we want is to be able to transact freely, to build freely. Yes, to follow the law and work within our interests. But to me, this is a huge red flag. And I think there are probably a lot of Trump supporters that either are asleep or because they like him, they're willing to give him a pass. And to me, this is something that everyone in America should just say, no, we're not going to stand for this.
Completely agree. Do you guys remember when Howard Lutnick came out, they were talking about doing a sovereign wealth fund? And the example he used was, well, if we're going to, you know, during COVID, like if we're going to buy those vaccines, we should buy, you know, equity in Pfizer and all these companies. So that way, when their price pumps, because we're influencing the market by subsidizing their shots, that now we get to benefit as the federal government from that. Like, to me, this is the same thing. Like, I'm just waiting for the announcement. They take a 10% stake, say, and I'm waiting for the announcement afterwards that they're going to pump a bunch of money into new facilities and all of these things. And they're going to poach, you know, developers and engineers from Taiwan and bring them over here. And they've just created like this little federal cottage industry, basically. Ben, what's your take on this?
Man, I want to give a shout out to the local liberals, man. They got a win on this, really calling this. They've been talking about how Trump's going to do this sort of thing for forever, and they could use some wins. They've been getting crushed the last couple of years. So we'll give them a shout out for basically being right about Trump just doing exactly what they said he was going to do. He's going to use his power to just gobble up more and more, and that's what he's doing.
To be fair, I tend to favor the uniparty thesis on all of this, and I don't view the left wing as the party of small government either. So I don't think it's quite the win that they might hope it would be. But to the extent they've been calling him out for this, yes, it's happening. But I don't think Kamala would have been much better. I think that's just what happens when you have communists trying to run the country. Guys, in the interest of time, let's just wrap up with this one. Former White House crypto official Bo Hines joins Tether as a U.S. Bitcoin advisor. Greer, I'm going to let you take this one first because you called it last week. Well, you this wasn't exactly what you were expecting. You told me offline, but you said he's going to land some cush job in Bitcoin, crypto, something to that effect. And here he is. What do you think?
Yeah, I'm sorry. More bad news. You know, I mean, congrats to Bo. He got a great job. You know, Tether is one of the biggest buyers of the U.S. debt. Who uses Tether? The global South, countries in Latin America, Africa. The mechanism that they do it, they buy treasuries and you get whatever, you get the Tether instead of your local currency. Effectively, we are dumping our debt around the world and we're propping up demand for U.S. treasuries. And I think, this is my prediction, I don't know, but I think Bo going there is going to build inroads between Tether and the West, Tether and the United States. We don't use it here, there's no need. You know, our dollar is essentially already digital, but I see Tether becoming more embedded in our financial system. And to me, that just says, you know, this is the CBDC we all said we weren't going to have, and Congress said we'd never do it, and it's already here. I mean, this is the bridge that's being built. And today, my opinion is you either have Bitcoin in self-custody or you're going to suffer whatever the consequences of the stablecoins, the Genius Act, the digital assets. You will not have a choice. Everything that they build will be surveilled, controlled, manipulated. And today, it's so true. You have two options. Stay in that system, the one they're building, or get into Bitcoin self-custody where your transactions can't be stopped and your wealth can't be devalued. I mean, you know, I'm looking for a win from the Trump admin, but to me, we're just seeing more bad news after more bad news. And I think if you're on the sidelines, you need to wake up now.
Tony's been saying for quite some time that stablecoins are CBDCs that have not yet been activated. And this feels like a very compelling support for his thesis on this. And Ben, I'd be curious if you agree.
Yeah, we talked about this in the past, Michael, how the demographic of people I'm the most bullish on awakening right now is those conservatives that have been longtime Trump fans, but they are also right now dialed into the correct information flows of Twitter and maybe even Noster and places like that, where they can see the craziness of what he's actually doing and understand that it's bad. So they are detaching from that left-right paradigm. And I think the more people we can detach from that, the better, because they start understanding the bigger picture, like you've talked about. And to me, I think the most important thing we can all do is, this is the theme of the day, just meme your ass off, man. Just keep shit posting about this, showing people how bad this is, how bad it could be, and help folks wake up and understand what's really going on here and the implications.
Amen. I think that's a good place to wrap up. Hey, Ben, why don't you give a handoff? Tell people where they can find you. For everyone who's listening, you got to go check out Ben's stuff. If you want fascinating listens, it's his show.
Yeah, man. Wherever you're watching or listening, I'm on YouTube, Rumble, Fountain for the podcast, and Noster and Twitter, as all the usuals. So see you there.
Awesome. And of course, Greer, people know you, but shopbirdflip.com, is that right? Go get your low opsec Bitcoin apparel. Great stuff. And stick around for another minute to hear a bit about the Bitcoin way. Gents, this was a blast as always. Ben, look forward to seeing you again soon. Greer, I know we'll be talking. For everyone who doesn't know already, Greer's joined as our chief marketing officer. So he and I are in touch every day, all the time. So guys, good chatting. We'll talk soon.
See you later, guys. Great chatting.
Cheers. Hey there, thank you for tuning into Bitcoin Banter. Wanted to take a quick minute to remind you to head on over to thebitcoinway.com/podcast to schedule a free 30-minute consultation with a member of our team. It is critical that you take full control of your wealth, and we can equip you with the skills needed to take 100% self-custody of your Bitcoin. For our existing clients, we also offer our Bitcoin Bootcamp, where we will conduct quarterly calls with you to reinforce the training we've provided and fill any gaps in your knowledge. While you're at it, ask about our solo mining service, something we think everybody should be doing. We also help with addressing your personal and online cybersecurity, and we can even help you set up a privacy phone free of big tech and Big Brother surveillance. Don't underestimate the amount of tracking taking place in your browser and in the apps you use every day. And finally, whether you're ready to make a move to a freedom-loving paradise or want a backup in the event of a worst-case scenario, be sure to ask about our Plan B residency program. Being untethered from a single location is one of the best ways to ensure your self-sovereignty into the future. Again, you can schedule a free consultation at thebitcoinway.com/podcast. If you are enjoying the show, please do me a favor, subscribe to our channel wherever you listen, give us a 5-star review, and drop us a comment. We would really appreciate it, and it makes it easier for others to begin finding us as we preach the gospel of financial self-sovereignty and beyond. Thank you again for listening. Until next time, stay safe, stay sovereign, and remember, the yield on Bitcoin is freedom.